Well, Pablo, thanks for joining us. We want to talk about this project that you've been doing to extend Microsoft Word for authors of scientific articles destined for journal publication, which is an interesting story about what can be done with the XML capabilities of Word. It's also an interesting story about kind of the evolution of journal publishing in a world that's moving from predominantly print to electronic and online first, and maybe only in some cases. So how did this start for you? What's the background?
So this is what we called inside of Microsoft, a incubation project, which is basically we had a set of, in essence, three people that had an idea, and those would be Jean-Paul Lee, who is one of the key people in sort of the early beginnings of XML, Jim Gray, which is
Oh, really?
a researcher at Microsoft.
I didn't know Jim was part of the genesis of this.
Oh yes, basically both him and Jean-Paul Lee were the ones that really, really push to get this started, and actually both of them were the ones that recruited me to run this project.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
So it was, it's been a little bit over a year now since Jim disappeared,
Yeah.
and that was a fairly big blow considering sort of his key role into getting the project into being.
Yeah.
And the third key person in getting this going is Tony Hay,
Okay.
who is very influential in terms of getting content into an electronic form and open access.
Yeah, so we should explain for people who may not know, Tony runs what's called the Technical Computing Initiative and is very involved with helping Microsoft help various people in the scientific community with kind of the computing and information management challenges that they face.
Yeah, and that's actually the sort of the spirit of the project, which is in many disciplines, most of the authors use Word for their article authoring. So one of the things that we started looking at as part of the project was, well, what are the things that we can do to actually make the experience for authors better when authoring articles? What can we do to simplify the workflow, not just for the authors, but also for the journals or the archives, and in many ways, lower the cost and streamline the process?
Now, this is generally true not just for scientific publishing, but for all kinds of publishing. And it's been true for a long time that a lot of stuff gets written in Word, and there have historically been real challenges getting that Word content converted into the kinds of, long-term formats that we wanted it to be in. So, we kind of want stuff to be in XML, and we want stuff to be richly decorated with metadata. And the strategies that publishers have tended to use are strategies that involve giving people templates, which basically try to use styles to control what's in the documents. But since 2003, and especially since the revision of Word in 2007, there have been a set of XML capabilities which have made possible a much more robust way of dealing with this kind of stuff. And this is really, as far as I've seen, one of the projects that is finally bringing those capabilities to light.
Yeah, that's one of the things I always take care of when talking about the project is, styles was the best thing that people could use. So I really don't want to put down the people that use styles to build their templates because, given the state of the tools before the Word 2003, that was the best you could do. So people actually got quite far by relying on styles, but they were very fragile, as people did copy and paste between different documents or within the same document, they would bleed styles across, and then trying to disentangle that when converting the file made it fairly hard.
Yeah, that's part of the problem, and part of the problem is that along with the incorporation of the content itself, there's also this process around the metadata, and that process is that task actually winds up being divided. So in your case, in the case of scientific publishing, it's the division of labor is between the author who's going to supply some metadata about himself or herself and about the subject of the article, but also the journal publisher has a set of metadata which is really not in the author's province at all. And so that's a shared responsibility, and there needs to be an information management system that embraces that division of labor.
Yeah, and also one of the tricky things becomes, what kind of user experience, what kind of user interface you present to the different audiences.
Mm-hmm.
I almost think of this as having, this whole workflow, this publishing workflow, as having three different audiences. There is one audience which is made of the authors, and the authors are very much subject matter experts, but they may know nothing about the publishing process. And you really don't want them to have to learn that.
Yeah, they should know very little about it.
Then the second set of audience is the folks at the journal, mainly the journal editors or copy editors. Those folks are in many cases also subject matter experts, especially the editors.
Mm-hmm.
But they do know a little bit about sort of the structure of their journal. They know a little bit about the format, and they know a little bit about the metadata that they need to apply.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the third set of audience, which is folks that either do the back end for the journals. There are any number of different companies and software vendors that do sort of back end tools and back end services, as well as the folks that work on the electronic archives. As you mentioned earlier, with this move from print to electronic or electronic only journals, the role of the information repository or the archives it becomes very significant.
Mm-hmm.
So either the journals, if you think of big commercial publishers, they have their own information repositories, or you have some centralized information repositories either on university libraries or larger institutions, for example, the National Library of Medicine with PubMed Central, or even at Cornell you have ArchiveX, which is the archive for mainly particle physics and math and computer science.
Yeah, the former LANL archive, now called ArchiveX. Yep.
Yep. So that is another set of audience, which is that one. That audience is very, very technical in the sense of understanding the file format, understanding the different elements, and understanding the different properties of the file.
But even those folks shouldn't necessarily need to master all of that. It's just that they historically have done, but they would rather spend their time on math and physics too, I'm sure,
correct,
than on the minutia of XML publishing.
That is correct. The way that sort of the pipeline is being set up today, you end up you start with some high level representation or high level document. Think of it as the Word document or Doc or DocX, and in the process today, at a certain point, you break into converting all that to XML, and then from that point on, folks do all of their editing in an XML editor.
So this is true for, as you've explained to me, a lot of the stuff in the biological and medical space these days, and so the format that's been defined by the National Library of Medicine is the one that you're supporting in this add-in, and you call it NLM XML. And it's a representation of, well, there are actually a number of DTDs, four of them, I guess, that have been defined by the NLM, and so that's what you're supporting here. And the reason that you're doing that is that it's what PubMed is using, and it's become a kind of a consensus standard in that particular space, right?
Yeah, that's true. And it's not only used by the folks at PubMed Central, but a lot of the commercial publishers also moved to using the NLM DTD as their archival format. And we're also beginning to see it being used by other publishers in other disciplines, for example, legal and social sciences.
Really?
Yes.
And they're using the NLM stuff as well because it's actually general enough for that?
It is fairly general. And one of the things that I'm really impressed and I really like is the community related to scientific, technical, and medical publishing. The community is moving to not reinventing the wheel,
mm-hmm.
but actually leveraging something that is in fairly common use,
mm-hmm.
Which is very encouraging because usually the tendency is for everybody to build their own format.
Yeah.
And the formats, the differences between different formats tend to be small, especially on this space in relation to archiving. One significant point in relation to archiving is that the format usually does not encode any presentation element.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the semantics and the metadata and not about, you know, what font or font color or background image you use.
Right.
You know, as you try to preserve data for the long term, you know, for centuries from now, really the presentation, I think, is not relevant, but the content is a relevant part. You can always take a transformation, an XSLT or some other kind of transformation, and from that generate the presentation that that's human consumable.
Yeah. So as we see in the screencast, which will accompany this interview, what you've got is an add-in to Word that presents an editing enhancement for both authors of these journal articles and the publishers and editors of those articles. And so there's an interface for the author, which helps that person kind of fill in the required template and also assign those elements of metadata which were appropriate for the author to assign. And then there's a separate interface for the editor. And explain a little bit about what about how this can change the workflow around this stuff for the better.
So, you know, if you start from the author side, one sort of key premise was making the effort of producing a valid document simpler.
Mm-hmm.
So I very much think of it as guiding the author as to what data they need to supply and do it in a structured manner that will make the article valid. You sort of want to avoid as much as you can, you want to avoid having the author round trip with the journal editor back and forth because, you know, they didn't put the right sections or they didn't fill in all the required information or they didn't provide all of the information about themselves and their co-authors.
And that happens a lot nowadays?
Yes, that you know, especially both not providing the required information, but also, for example, not providing all the information about themselves
mm-hmm.
or the co-authors,
mm-hmm.
or having errors in that information.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as we can do to simplify, especially the repetitive aspects, you know, if you tend to work with some other colleagues on a paper, you likely work with the same colleagues on future papers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, trying to avoid having to enter that repetitive data and giving the possibility for errors to be introduced. Because one thing to remember is, you know, we didn't touch about it earlier. As we move to electronic publishing, search becomes key. You know, probably the main way that people will find your content or that people will find any content is through search. And for you to be able to have good search results, you depend on the papers having good information in them.
Mm-hmm.
So if the last name of the author is misspelled, well, that makes it harder to find all the authors from a certain paper, all the papers from a certain author. If the title is not tagged, then you know you wouldn't be able to mm-hmm. find you know a paper by a certain title.
But in terms of the consistency of author information, you can help with this word add-in by kind of normalizing the metadata editing process, but it still depends on there being a reliable, you know, disambiguated set of author names available, which ultimately are being managed by the publishers and ideally by a federation of the publishers and ideally even more broadly than that, right?
That's correct. You know, I think that if we look long-term down the road, we would see a more of a global directory where you would just reference somebody in that global directory to have a name.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
So in many ways, we have to build up to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in some ways, when you look at the add-in, there are, in this current version, small building steps that will get us to at least a better baseline than we have available today,
yeah.
And then be able to build from that.
Or given that the world is moving to that baseline anyway, we'll make it quicker and easier to get there.
That's correct.
Yeah,
but you know if going back to the benefit, if we think of the authors, the key thing is to provide a very simple interface for the authors. As we look at different features and as we look at different capabilities, if it looks complicated, we'll drop it. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll rather have simplicity over richness.
Mm-hmm.
One of the prevailing directives is we don't want to duplicate Word UI.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if there is a way to do tables or if there's a way to do equations or if there's a way to do reference list in the Word UI, we'll use those and we'll augment them as needed, but we don't want to provide a lot of new user interface that then the authors have to learn.
Yeah, yeah. What I find interesting from a workflow perspective about this is that, you know, as we've said, this is a workflow that involves different roles, and people in different roles are doing things and touching different pieces of data and metadata. And historically, and I think mostly still today, though that's a fragmentary kind of a process, and it also tends to be a one-way process, which is to say that once the article is converted into this NLM format, it's typically not available, you know, back to the author to make revisions in the original editing context, right? So, you know, there's sort of this, that one way in which it kind of breaks down is like, you know, now it's the publisher, or, you know, the person at the journal who's responsible for kind of round tripping change requests. You know, you can't, you know, sort of, right? You can't, the author can't kind of republish a revised version from their source editing environment. And similarly with the editing of the metadata, right? The author might want to make some changes. The journal publisher might want to make some changes. And those things, as I understand it right now, are tending to happen in, you know, disparate environments. And what this is, you know, what this is showing is that, you know, it's what has always been the promise for, you know, real robust XML content editing on the desktop, is that you can combine, all of this stuff into a common environment, you know, so that the unit of workflow, the document, is something that can flow to different people in different contexts and be added to and modified in different ways, but it hangs together as, you know, a token, basically, that can kind of move through this process in a predictable way, that its movement through the process can be tracked in a, you know, sanely and relatively straightforwardly. And that's just a big deal, you know, in ways that go far beyond the specific domain of scientific and technical publishing.
That's correct. And actually, in addition to just keeping all the data together and presenting a simple interface for people to be able to access the data and edit it, one thing that that we've gotten feedback from publishers is, as they move to this electronic first or electronic only world for publishing, people expect that the publishing times are going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
If you think of print, there would be these very long cycles between the time you submitted the article until, you know, the article actually came out in paper. Now people expect those cycles to be shorter, but with the current sort of tools and sort of disconnects between formats that you were mentioning before, it's kind of challenging to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to make a quick revision and send it back to the journal, well, that may be too late because they already started the process of conversion. And sort of once you start the process of conversion, there's no stopping it in many ways.
Yeah.
And to touch on another angle that you mentioned, as people have tried the add-in with the focus on scientific and technical articles, I've gotten feedback from folks that they want to use this for example, grant requests.
Mm-hmm.
So moving away from this article content to actually other types of content which would benefit from having this structure and having the validation, which are more sort of mundane but still essential in the sort of the scientific research and funding aspects.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it obviously goes much more broadly than that. So this is, you know, this problem is almost a universal one. Right?
Yes. Anytime you want to either validate content, or you want to preserve the content for a long time, or you need people to provide content in a certain form, I think that the capabilities that we're showing in this add-in would be relevant to those cases.
Mm-hmm. So it's been, let's think about this, since 2003, really, that there was the first major deployment of XML capability for Office and for Word. We haven't seen to date as much of this kind of use of that capability as, you know, at least I would have expected,
mm-hmm.
or hope, at least hoped to have seen by now. Why do you think that that is?
I actually think that probably the biggest challenge there was you didn't find the XML content as the default format for Word.
Mm.
So you had to have authors do special things for them to produce XML-based content.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you think of the format, for example, from the National Library of Medicine, it contains things that are not part of sort of the Word content or Word UI. And in 2003, it was either not possible to extend the XML content, if you think of the document, or even extending the UI was not as simple as it is in 2007. So I do think that with Word 2007, you end up with a set of capabilities that come packaged together in a single installation that really sort of acts as an enabling and sort of bring all the capabilities together at the same time in the same place.
So what you did have in 2003 was user-defined schema.
Mm-hmm.
But you're suggesting that, that wasn't sufficient and that the newer capability of kind of arbitrary, including arbitrary chunks of XML along with the Word content is more flexible for this purpose?
Yeah, there's even two parts to that. There is content within the document, which usually folks talk about custom schemas. So the ability to have new XML elements that are part of the document,
mm-hmm.
that in essence encapsulate different semantics.
Mm-hmm.
So that's more robust and more expressive in the Word 2007 Open XML format. And then second to that, which ends up being relevant for this project, is the ability to have other XML data packaged within the document file.
Mm-hmm.
And that's custom XML is usually what people will talk about it.
Mm-hmm. And this is the technique that you're using for the journal metadata.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
And even an interesting aspect of this is since it's all, in essence, standardly defined as part of the Open XML format and the packaging of the file follows a standard as well, if there are developers that want to build their own tools to either create metadata, access metadata, or even create the whole file, they're able to do that as well.
Yeah. No, I think that's an important point. And so, in fact, before you mentioned sort of three audiences for this stuff, and, of course, the largest audience for this are the researchers and others who actually want to search for and find and use and recombine this stuff. And from that perspective, you know, it's absolutely relevant that if you're a researcher who's acquired a whole bunch of these articles and are now working on something which is referencing and recombining them, that you might very well have some other kind of tool which is going to simply rip open these XML files and read the metadata and work with it.
That's correct. You know, when we talked about the sort of the three audiences before, it was mainly focusing on the audience for the add-in.
Right.
But now if you look at the format, that introduces a fourth audience, which are developers. So, you know, the folks that develop tools for the workflows or even tools for acquiring content from, let's say, some machine or some instrument.
Yep.
Or folks that want to connect some of the content that came from the authors from the journal, connect that to a database. So now you're able to crack open the file, find the right custom XML chunk, go in that, find the elements, and then either add or extract information from that into a database, for example.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So yeah, you can very much think of that as a fourth audience that is enabled by the content.
So the status of this is a sort of a first cut at something which you're putting out there so that the journal publishers themselves can start to experiment with it and help you come up with what the templates will be so that they can then turn around and start to deploy this to authors and it can actually start to be used, right?
That's correct. This technology preview is meant for in essence, people doing evaluation and providing feedback,
mm-hmm.
Certainly not yet for production use. One aspect on that I wanted to touch on is the overall idea is that the journals would create the templates themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, very much what I'm interested on is providing the sort of the capabilities and the infrastructure that enables them to create the template and then distribute those templates directly to the authors.
Right, right. So where do things stand right now? You've been, I assume, speaking to the usual suspects, Nature and people like that?
We've been talking to very many different journals. We've been talking to different publishers and talking to different archives.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because each constituency has sort of a different either set of requirements or different set of interests or feedback. You go from sort of more folks on the sort of the editor side of journals, which are very interested on things like the templates and how they created templates and how they validated the data, to the other extreme, which are folks that work at PubMed Central or Archive that are very interested on how the metadata gets presented or how the metadata gets validated.
Mm-hmm.
So very distinct audiences, very distinct level of awareness in terms of format, but it's very interesting because we're basically bridging these disparate sets of audiences in a single tool.
Okay, so this is good. What else should we include here, do you think?
So we expect to have this as a beta shortly. And then we expect the 1.0 release of this to occur late summer. And it will be available as a free add-in for Word. That's something that we didn't touch on before. Pretty much for certain disciplines, there's a large audience that already uses Word. So this will be a value add for those audiences.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, Pablo. I fear that this will only seem interesting to the relatively small number of folks who have a direct interest in scientific, technical, and medical publishing. But I hope that it will be apparent that this really is a much broader kind of thing. And you hinted at it when you mentioned that this NLM format, despite being invented for the particular purposes of folks in those industries, is actually starting to be taken up by people in the legal business, for example. So I think that's one interesting indication that this is really a very, very broad and general kind of thing. And I don't know. I'm excited about it because I'm just one of those people that kind of cares about publishing and metadata and robust information systems and open formats, and this brings all of those things together. So I'm glad to know that it's happening, and I'm glad to know that you're working on it.
Well, and I think that even beyond the folks on publishing, I think that anybody that's interested in XML should be very excited about this because it's really, I think, of really proving the sort of the value proposition for XML and in many ways coming of age of XML in a mainstream production environment.
Yeah. I think for those of us who've been thinking about those things for a long time, you almost tend to get frustrated and think, oh, it's taking so long to really catch on. And then at some point you start to actually get depressed and, it's like, oh, it'll never happen. But then, in the fullness of time, these things do happen. It just takes time. It really, really, it really takes a long time for things like that to make their way into the mainstream. But this is it is a great example of that.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Well, thanks, Pablo.
Okay.
All right, so let me see. I'll turn that.